is Oral History Interview Number 23 with Adam N. Boyd, MD, a graduate of the Medical School Class of 1926. Dr. Boyd, could you tell us something about your family and your early childhood?
Well, I went to small town school in Texas and later a rural school, and finally went into town, so to speak, and graduated from a small town school in 1917.
What town was that?
That was Franklin, Texas.
In Texas.
County seat town in central Texas. the war was on at that time, and I was a little young at the moment to go in service, so I went to the University of Texas as a freshman in the fall of 1917.
How did you pick that school, decide to go to that school?
Well, I was pretty unknowledgeable about schools. Out of 10 people in our graduating class, there was only two or three that went to college, which was not exactly the common thing to do in those days. Anyway, my school progress was interrupted when I went into the service. After I got out, I came back and finished my work.
When was, to go back a little bit about your early childhood, what was your father's occupation?
Farmer.
A farmer.
Farmer.
Uh-huh. Did you have brothers and sisters?
I had three brothers and three sisters.
Did they go to college?
Yes. All of my brothers and sisters went to college, except one brother and one sister. But my sister graduated from nursing at Herman Hospital in Houston. So,
what did the other children do?
Well, my older sister was a school teacher, and I had a brother that was a farmer, another brother that was an entomologist, and two brothers that were farmers, and I believe that was only ones that had particular occupations.
It sounds as if your parents did put an emphasis on education.
Well,
did they?
It was not a question so much of my parents putting emphasis on education, because really they weren't financially able to. But we just sort of worked it out. I don't know how. Sometimes it did work out, but it was not easy.
Did you pretty much have to earn the money for tuition then yourself?
I did. yes. My college career after the war was interrupted by virtue of having to work to put myself along, and I lost a year in medical school. As a matter of fact, I was unable to go on to medical school and dropped out of there and taught a laboratory course in the University of Texas and went on and got my master's degree between my junior and senior years.
I see. So you went into college and you were there for how long before you
I was
went?
There 1 year in the one summer year. Before I went into service.
Did you volunteer or was it a draft?
Well,
the
school put in what I think you recall as SATC back in the early days.
I see.
And we were in school and a member of the service. And we were sent for to officers training camp from that contingent.
Mm-hmm.
So I was graduated. I was discharged after the war from officers training camp in Louisville, Kentucky, mm-hmm. Fort Zachary Taylor.
Mm-hmm. So how long were you in the service then?
Oh, just a few months.
Just a few months.
Just a few months.
Mm-hmm. But you did graduate from officers training?
No. Oh. No, after the war.
Oh, after?
I guess they considered it was a very expensive unit,
mm-hmm.
and they were one of the first units that was broken up, discharged.
I see. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Did you serve abroad at all?
No. No, I was in officers training camp when the armistice was signed.
And then, did you go back to college from then?
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm.
That was we were out of the services in December, and I went home and went right back to the university after the 1st of January.
Mm-hmm.
With a very large contingent of people that had been evacuated from the service.
Mm-hmm. What year were you in then? Were you a sophomore then when you went back?
Well, I was, yes. Of course, mm-hmm. it was all mixed up. I just can't begin to tell you how complicated things were mm-hmm. by virtue of interruption with the service and mm-hmm. Interruption with the influenza epidemic that they had that year.
Mm-hmm.
And
did you leave school during the epidemic or
no? No, I stayed in school through that epidemic and left school only when we went into service.
Mm-hmm. Were many people of your acquaintance seriously ill with with that?
Yes, it was a tremendous mortality rate in our part of the country.
And so the people you know died from it?
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm. Did you yourself have it?
No. Mm-hmm. I don't think any of my family had it.
None of your brothers and sisters and family? But many of your classmates then?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
The death rate was
very high. Did they know at that time the cause of it? What was their treatment?
Well, not much treatment.
Not much treatment. Not
mm-hmm. mostly supportive.
Mm-hmm. Is this what got you interested in becoming a doctor, or
no,
were there other influences?
I can't say what.
Mm-hmm.
I can't say what stimulated mm-hmm. my interest.
Mm-hmm.
Except the war was going on, and
mm-hmm.
and the need was emphasized.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember my high school principal said suggested to me that, why don't you go to the university and take that pre-med course mm-hmm. before it goes up to 3 years?
Uh-huh. So you entered the university with the idea of taking pre-med.
Yes.
Uh-huh. And you took that.
Yes.
What was your majors then in science or?
Chemistry.
In chemistry. Mm-hmm.
I wrote my master's thesis later on the reproductive mm-hmm. cycle of using the possum as an experimental animal.
Mm-hmm. Well, how did you decide which medical school to go to?
Oh, I don't know. I just saw Washington University
mm-hmm.
catalog.
Mm-hmm. You saw their catalog, and that made you interested.
Yes.
Uh-huh. And then you mentioned when you came to medical school. How large was your class?
75.
75.
75 uh-huh. standard class.
And how many of those graduated? Do you know?
All of them.
All of them
yeah.
graduated. Was there much competition to get into medical school then?
Oh, yes. It was maybe not anything like mm-hmm. it is now, but we thought it was competition.
Mm-hmm. Was there, once you were here involved in the program, did you find that there was a lot of competition and pressure among the students?
I don't recall that there mm-hmm. was a lot of, it seemed that everybody worked pretty hard.
Mm-hmm.
and some more more students mm-hmm. maybe had outside mm-hmm. Interest. Mm-hmm.
Did you pay your own way into?
I borrowed some money.
To pay.
And but in between my junior and senior year, I don't know how I got the job, mm-hmm. but I was approached by somebody from Monsanto Chemical Company.
Mm-hmm.
I had a master's degree then mm-hmm. and to do some animal experimentation mm-hmm. on some of their products.
I see.
And I worked at that most of the summer between my junior and senior year. Well, the first part of the summer I helped teach a zoology class in the University of Texas.
Nice.
In the middle of the summer, I came down here and went to work for Monsanto on this, and did some work with them during my senior year,
mm-hmm.
and did enough work that it helped put me through medical school, through my last
mm-hmm.
year of medical school.
Mm-hmm. Although you did have to borrow money too.
Yes, I borrowed money.
You mentioned a few minutes ago that you dropped out of medical school for a year,
yeah.
and was that when you got your M.A.?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So you went back to Texas.
That's right.
Uh-huh.
But it was a question of going to work outside or doing something that I could make a little money and accomplish something.
Mm-hmm.
I felt like
mm-hmm.
the tutorship that I had at the university would at least defray my expenses for the year.
I see.
And
mm-hmm.
Then the degree mm-hmm. would be all bonus.
Mm-hmm. Did you remember any of your teachers in medical school that were outstanding?
Oh, yes.
Maybe you could name and tell us a little bit about a few of them. Which one do you come most readily to mind?
Well, I guess I would have to say Dr. Barney Brooks.
I see. Uh-huh. Could you tell us a little about him? And
Dr. Barney Brooks was a graduate of the University of Texas long years ago,
before that. Mm-hmm.
Then he went to Hopkins and got his degree, and he came to Washington University. He was a fixer here. He was Dr. Graham's associate or assistant.
Mm-hmm.
Dr. Barney Brooks later went down to Vanderbilt.
Mm-hmm.
When they reorganized their medical school about 1925.
Mm-hmm.
He went down there as professor of surgery. And I later went down there to do my internship, mainly because of Dr. Brooks.
Mm-hmm.
And I might add that other members of the faculty, Dr. Barr, David Barr, came here while I was a student, I think, during my sophomore, junior year.
Mm-hmm.
Dr. Alexander, I don't remember what his first name was, he came here at about the same
mm-hmm.
time. And of course we had men like Dr. Ernest Sachs.
Mm-hmm. Did he tell us something about him?
Oh, I remember his noon clinics on Thursday. And
what were they like?
he'd have a patient down in the pit, in the amphitheater, mm-hmm. you know, so to speak. And he'd get groups of three or four students down there.
Mm-hmm.
And he'd quiz them on everything pertaining to whatever subject he was.
Mm-hmm.
He was representing that at that day. But
then where were the rest of the students? You would take them two at a time then?
Two or three at a time, and the rest of them would be in the amphitheater.
The rest of them would be up in the seats watching and listening.
Watching and feeling how thankful they
yes.
were that they weren't in the pit.
I see. Uh-huh. And What were your contacts with Dr. Barr? You mentioned him.
He conducted ward rounds, and of course he was had his lecture
mm-hmm.
for the whole class,
mm-hmm.
and ward rounds, of course, were
mm-hmm.
the small sections that
mm-hmm.
we were in.
What were his lectures like?
Oh, his lectures were real, real interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever the topic was, I remember I wrote a paper in medicine. Dr. Barr had made mention of the fact that in diagnosis of low bar pneumonia, that the chlorides were increased, I believe it was, in output. And I wrote my annual paper on that subject because I knew how interested he was in it.
Yes.
And I did a lot of researching and found a number of patients that they had made these determinations on.
Mm-hmm.
And it was interesting, and I got a favorable comment from him.
Very good. Did you have much contact with Dr. Graham in classes or outside of classes?
Dr. Graham held some ward rounds, yes.
Mm-hmm.
And of course he had his weekly lecture to the whole class.
Mm-hmm. By the way, we do have Dr. Graham's papers here in the historical archives.
Yes.
So we
on his first operation on the lung.
Yes, that's very famous.
I'll have to remark about an instance that took place with Dr. Barney Brooks.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Of course, you know, they didn't do a lot of real big world-shattering surgery in those days. But he had this patient with large abdominal aorta aneurysm.
Mm-hmm.
And he set the operation in the amphitheater where the students were all gathered,
mm-hmm.
I mean, many of them.
Mm-hmm.
And he got in there, and for some reason or other, I guess it wasn't difficult, he tore into the aneurysm, and he stuck his finger up in the proximal part of the abdominal aorta to control the bleeding, and turned around to the amphitheater group, said, "Gentlemen, I now have my finger in the abdominal aorta." Well, there's just one thing he could do, was to tie it off, which he did. And the man went ahead and got well.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, he had enough collateral circulation there to take care of the lower extremity circulation.
Mm-hmm.
But the man went ahead and died of something else. And that patient, that report was recorded in the American Medical Journal.
I see. Mm-hmm. Could you talk a little bit more about some of your other teachers?
Well,
you pretty well mentioned many of them,
I guess. Of course, we remember Dr. Barr and Dr. Alexander, Dr. Graham,
Dr. Alexander, do you remember his lectures or his?
Yes, but I don't remember him as much as I did Dr. Barr.
Mm-hmm.
I don't believe he lectured to the
mm-hmm.
sections as much as Dr.
Mm-hmm.
Barr did.
What was the medical school like then? I suppose there were many less buildings than there is now.
Compared to now, it was a wide spot in the room.
Mm-hmm.
I was over in one of the buildings just a while ago, and I saw
mm-hmm.
some of the old pictures.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw the picture at Barnes Hospital in 1920. That was 6 years before
mm-hmm.
I graduated.
Mm-hmm.
And the three-story building with ward projections out, say, away
mm-hmm.
from the corridor, and I forget now how they designated the building, something like 21, 19, 20.
I see.
Uh-huh. Each building, each wing had a designated number and the first number was the floor,
mm-hmm.
what wing it was, and
mm-hmm.
and then the second letter was the floor that it was on. It was just a three-story building,
mm-hmm.
I believe.
Mm-hmm.
They had just completed the maternity building when we graduated.
I see.
That year.
Mm-hmm. I guess they haven't stopped building since. Yeah. Since that time, there are still new buildings going up. Were you a member of any medical fraternity?
Yes, I was a member of the Phi Beta Pi Medical Fraternity and was a president of the chapter, mm-hmm. Archon we called mm-hmm. it, 1 year.
Mm-hmm.
The fraternity house was at that time, I believe still is, over on Forest Park Boulevard.
I think the fraternity, at least the Washington University chapter, has been dissolved.
And
I'm not aware of any medical fraternities existing.
Oh, yes, so they're mm-hmm. gone.
I think they're gone.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Did you stay in the fraternity house?
Yes. Uh-huh. Yes, I stayed.
Your term. Uh-huh. How did one go about getting into a fraternity? Was it an exclusive group or?
Well, just sort of a common consent and.
Mm-hmm.
Making friends with you and making friends with the members.
Mm-hmm. Were there any other aspects of your medical school here during the time you were here that you remember particularly as being interesting?
Nothing outstanding,
mm-hmm.
I think.
Mm-hmm. You were here 4 years then in medical school. Where did you have your internship?
Down at Vanderbilt University Hospital.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. How did you come to go there?
Well, I think it's probably because Dr. Barney Brooks had gone down as professor of surgery.
I see. Well, he had gone there and then you followed then.
He had gone there in the year before.
I see. Mm-hmm.
They had Vanderbilt just opened up the new
mm-hmm.
hospital in 1925.
Mm-hmm.
They got their new faculty mainly from Hopkins and Washington University.
I see. Mm-hmm. Were you there 1 year?
2 years.
2 years. Mm-hmm. And was this called an internship then? Or
yes.
Was it a general internship or?
Well, I had a combination internship in pathology and surgery.
I see.
I don't know how it happened, but it was a nice combination.
Mm-hmm. And did you go on to a residency? Did they have?
No, I just had 2 years,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
and went into practice.
After you finished that, where did you decide to go into practice? Did you go back to Texas?
Well, I was from Texas,
mm-hmm.
and I just thought
uh-huh.
that would be a good place
uh-huh.
to go back to.
Mm-hmm.
However, I went back to Houston.
I see.
And I had never lived there before.
Mm-hmm.
But it was not too far away from there, part
mm-hmm.
of the state.
Mm-hmm. Did it take a long time to build up a practice?
Yeah.
Then
I just really got started when the Depression came along.
I see. Mm-hmm.
And things weren't too bad right at first,
mm-hmm.
but later on got awfully bad.
Mm-hmm.
And it was hard.
Mm-hmm.
I would hate to go through it again.
Mm-hmm.
Even some of the men that were well established in medicine had a hard time making collections.
Mm-hmm.
But it finally moved out.
Did you remain in Houston?
Yes. All the time. Since
1928. Are you still practicing? Or?
No, I retired 4 years
ago. 4 years ago. So you practiced until 4 years ago. And then it's been a general practice?
Yes,
mm-hmm.
general practice.
Mm-hmm. Is there anything else you'd like to say about your practice? Did you specialize at all
cases? Well, I enjoyed a good general practice.
What I suppose they would call it a family practice
right,
today.
Right, it'd be called family practice
uh-huh,
now. It's
uh-huh.
a new term that they've designated in the last few years.
So did you handle births, for
oh,
example?
Oh yes, I did. I did OB,
mm-hmm.
and strangely enough, we did a lot of home deliveries in those days.
I
of course,
see.
The Depression was on.
Mm-hmm.
While the expense in the hospital wouldn't be very great.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people prefer to have the babies at home.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, about the first question we asked a patient that came in to see us, a new OB case,
mm-hmm.
was, do you want to have your baby mm-hmm. in the hospital, or do you want to mm-hmm. be delivered at home?
Mm-hmm. So they did have that choice then?
Yes, they had that choice.
They could do.
And that went on for a few years. But finally, after things began to brighten up a bit, most of us just didn't have time to do home delivery.
Mm-hmm.
it was real time consuming.
Mm-hmm. When did you stop then home deliveries?
After things started improving in the early 30s, like in 33 or 4 mm-hmm. or 5.
Then you handled what would be now called pediatrics. Did you handle the children?
Yeah.
And then
I had a little job in a clinic, a junior league clinic.
Mm-hmm.
Conducted a clinic in Houston, and
mm-hmm.
and I got that job in 1929. It paid me a little salary that really was very helpful,
mm-hmm.
and we took care of. It was a children's clinic,
mm-hmm.
and they even paid the hospital bill on tonsillectomy, so many tonsillectomies, I think mm-hmm. about 50 a year.
Mm-hmm.
And they paid hospital bills on deserving obstetrical mm-hmm. cases, maybe to the tune of about 25 per year.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember we had a contract with the Old Methodist Hospital, which is now a very leading hospital,
mm-hmm.
and we did all those, both the tonsillectomies and mm-hmm. the obstetrics in their hospital.
Mm-hmm. So you were in private practice, but then you did have this association with the clinic.
And just 2 hours a day.
2 hours a day. Mm-hmm. How many other doctors were associated with the clinic?
No, just me.
Just you,
yeah.
I see. Uh-huh. Was this clinic supported by a foundation then?
Well, it was Junior League of Houston.
I see.
And they made their money mm-hmm. by different methods. Mm-hmm. They still conduct a clinic in Hampton Hospital.
Then was this clinic for people who couldn't afford to
that's right.
to do these things.
People
they didn't have
that
money.
That were needy
mm-hmm.
and could just come and apply mm-hmm. without going through a lot of red tape.
I see. Uh-huh. That's very interesting.
It was.
Did you do operations then when you?
Oh, I got on the staff at the City Hospital and on surgery, and I worked. We had plenty of time to mm-hmm. do outside work, so
uh-huh.
to speak. And I worked hard at that.
Mm-hmm.
I got on the obstetrical service at mm-hmm. Herman Hospital, and I worked hard at that.
Mm-hmm.
So I made use of all opportunities.
Mm-hmm. What kind of operations did you do?
Well, routine
mm-hmm.
abdominal thing, pelvic.
Mm-hmm.
Hernias, appendix, gallbladders.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
So you really were active in every
right.
every phase of practice.
I had a lot of experience, sir,
mm-hmm.
with my association with the City Hospital,
mm-hmm.
and had made considerable use of it.
Mm-hmm. Did you did you ever take into partnership any other doctors?
Yes, back in 1940-41,
mm-hmm.
I went in with a friend, and we mm-hmm. worked pretty much together on mm-hmm. everything until he died in 1960.
I see.
By that time, I was sort of slowing down
mm-hmm.
anyway, I guess
mm-hmm.
you'd say.
Were you involved in any way in World War II when
no.
this
no.
came along? There is a big veterans hospital in Houston, isn't
yes.
there? Were you involved with that at all?
No.
Mm-hmm. How, when you were practicing, how many hours a week did you work? It was this
oh, I worked.
Day and night, or?
I worked 50 hours a week or more.
I see.
A lot of times, mm-hmm. of course, doing obstetrics, you just mm-hmm. had no way of predicting how much
yeah.
you did work.
Uh-huh. And when you worked, I
That's
suppose.
Right.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Did you, what kind of professional organizations did you participate in?
Well, that's interesting. I taught nurses for several years mm-hmm. at Old Methodist Hospital.
Was there a nursing school there at Methodist
well,
Hospital?
They're affiliated with they, as such, do not have a nursing mm-hmm. school now. They're affiliated with other institutions.
I see. Mm-hmm.
Then I, there was a dental school there, and back in those days, I taught pathology at the dental school for
mm-hmm.
a number of years.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting.
And finally got so busy, I just felt like I had to give it up.
Mm-hmm. The dental students, and then were these nurses? Was this what they would call now continuing education for nurses, or were they on their way to becoming RNs?
They were. It was their. It was their curriculum
mm-hmm.
for their RNship.
Mm, I see. Mm-hmm. The. What medical societies do you belong to?
Well, Harris County Medical Society and for a while Southern.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, membership in the Harris County Medical Society mm-hmm. gave you membership in the State Medical Association
mm-hmm.
and for a long time in the mm-hmm. American Medical Association.
Mm-hmm. Did you belong to professional specialty or organizations? Or?
No, it'd be pretty hard to.
Since you were involved in all aspects, I guess the
yes.
General ones would be more useful.
I was on the staff and pretty active in the city hospital staff affairs and Herman
mm-hmm.
Hospital and
mm-hmm.
Methodist Hospital.
Mm-hmm.
I was the president of the Methodist Hospital staff one year.
You were. Mm-hmm. Well, it sounds as if you're really busy with not a spare moment.
I feel like there's another phase of activities that I pursued that back in the middle of the war,
mm-hmm.
When the rubber situation was so acute,
mm-hmm.
they opened the Goodyear Synthetic Rubber Company in Houston.
Mm-hmm.
And
this was World War II?
Yes,
mm-hmm.
it was 1943.
Mm-hmm.
And I was suggested to do their industrial work,
mm-hmm.
Which I did, somewhat out of a feeling of patriotism. That it was a government project, and while I was at an age level that I wouldn't have ever been drafted, I felt like it would be making a contribution to the
mm-hmm.
overall
mm-hmm.
War effort.
Mm-hmm.
So I arranged my schedule that I could go out there for an hour a day,
mm-hmm.
and do their examinations and took care of their industrial work.
Mm-hmm.
And I might add that I went on with that schedule until I closed my office. But in the meantime, a few years before I closed my office in 1972, I'd given up the emergency work, and we let a mm-hmm. clinic take that over,
mm-hmm.
which cut down on my activities mm-hmm. a great deal. And then when I closed my office, the rubber company asked me if I'd continue to come on out there and help them with their examinations mm-hmm. and all, which I consented to do,
mm-hmm.
and which I'm still doing.
I see.
Four mm-hmm. years and a half after I closed my office.
I see. So you haven't really retired.
I go out there 3 hours a week.
I see. Mm-hmm.
1 hour on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday.
Mm-hmm.
I treat no patients.
Mm-hmm.
I take care of no injuries. It's just a job of examining for new employees
mm-hmm.
and handling releases
mm-hmm.
for employees who have been off sick or injured.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, it's just sort of at times seems like it that I'm not needed there, but as long as they want
mm-hmm.
me, it gives me a little break in my retirement
yes.
mm-hmm. activities, which sometimes is not a bad idea,
mm-hmm.
besides a little revenue from it.
Yes, it sounds like an interesting thing to do.
But a lot of retired people find it hard mm-hmm. to pass the time
mm-hmm.
of day.
Mm-hmm.
And with that, going out there for a brief period, three times a week, and I have a farm outside of Houston.
Oh, you do have a farm.
Pick up,
have you had that for a long time?
I've had farms. I first started out in 1945 with a farm out there.
Mm-hmm.
Later on, I bought another farm.
I see.
First one was 130 acres, and then
mm-hmm.
I bought another little farm of 42 acres. And
I see.
Then the highway came along and took off about 29% of my first farm.
Mm-hmm.
And for some unknown reason, I didn't use very good judgment. But after I sold that right away, my CPA said, reinvest that money in
mm-hmm.
similar type property for,
mm-hmm.
to delay your tax
mm-hmm.
situation. And I bought a 350 acre place.
I see.
And kept it for 7 years and sold it
mm-hmm.
at a good profit.
Mm-hmm.
So farmland has been good to me.
Mm-hmm.
But right now I've only got the 42 acres and
mm-hmm.
it's something to play with and
mm-hmm.
enjoy.
Well, did you hire people then to run the farm?
I did for a while, but
uh-huh.
the big place, the 350 acre
mm-hmm.
place, I leased it for pasture and rice
I see.
Farm.
Mm-hmm.
It had a 13 acre lake on there and
mm-hmm.
had afforded
mm-hmm.
plenty of water for rice irrigation.
Mm-hmm. I see. So that you would lease out the land in that
yes.
way,
mm-hmm.
and you would have income, but you wouldn't have the problems of growing crops in the same way.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned your retirement and your work at the rubber plant, and then your farm. What other activities do you engage
well,
in?
Well,
any?
I just do a little Boy Scout work.
Mm-hmm.
And
go ahead.
This sort of thing and that and
mm-hmm. that
some of my friends need a little help, especially if they don't have a man around the house.
Mm-hmm.
My wife will volunteer my services.
I see. I'm mentioning the Boy Scouts reminds me of something I meant to ask you early, and I was wondering if there were any particular community activities you were involved
well,
in.
Well, my church work
mm-hmm.
and the Boy Scouts
mm-hmm.
and that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Did you have any chance to do any writing when
no.
you practiced?
No, I...
Mm-hmm. The practice itself was more than enough.
It was having four children, and mm-hmm. and it was pretty much of a job to keep mm-hmm. keep moving, especially back during the critical years.
Mm-hmm. What do you say, when did the hard times start, you know, for the nation? Would it be 1929?
No, as a matter of fact, while the Depression started in 1929, we had a discovery of oil not too far from Houston that sort of protected us mm-hmm. from the brunt mm-hmm. of the Depression mm-hmm. for the first few years. And actually, it didn't hit us so awfully hard until 1932.
I see.
Uh-huh. That was our bad year.
Uh-huh. 1932, and how long did it last then?
Well,
it
was in progress before that, but I mean mm-hmm. that was the height.
That's when.
And after, I think next year, 1933, it began to ease off just a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe due to the fact that a new administration had mm-hmm. gone in and new policies mm-hmm. and that sort of thing mm-hmm. during the Roosevelt. Different projects mm-hmm. established mm-hmm. to overcome the effects of the Depression.
So 1923 was the worst year then?
1932.
Yes. Excuse me. You mentioned your children. Have any of them followed in your footsteps?
No.
What occupations do they
have? Well, I have a son who's a banker,
mm-hmm.
and I have another son who is in the electronics business. He has his mm-hmm. own company,
mm-hmm.
and a daughter that's teaches Latin in one of the high schools. Another mm-hmm. daughter in Austin that is a housewife.
Mm-hmm.
But three of our children live in Houston.
I see. Mm-hmm. Are there any other aspects of your career you'd like to talk about? I may not have asked all the right questions. So.
No, I think you've covered the waterfront very well. You don't remember a lot of these. These things. I've had an interesting mm-hmm. life.
It sounds as if you had a very interesting and active life. Could you tell us how you believe medical school today differs from medical school from the time you were in medical school?
Well, the whole aspect of medicine is so different now than what it was back before the times of antibiotics and surgery in the chest mm-hmm. and the cardiovascular system. I can well remember when surgery was pretty well limited to the abdomen, general surgery.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't go in the chest from many things except strain and abscess, which we were all recall. Graham's first lung surgery here,
mm-hmm.
and that hadn't been too often many years ago.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess the medical education is about as different from it was in our days. Is the practice of medicine is different from what it was in those days?
Are there many? Are there, in Houston, are there as many general practitioners as there were, or has this changed into
well, there's an awful lot of general practice, you know, family
mm-hmm. Doctors.
Practice.
Mm-hmm.
Specialists, you might say.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, being a medical center, I think you would find a larger percentage of highly trained specialists
mm-hmm.
than you would in a non-medical center. Houston has two medical schools now. Baylor University and the University of Texas mm-hmm. has recently established a new medical school
there. I see.
Mm-hmm. And I think that attracts more specialization, mm-hmm. but there's still a lot of mm-hmm. general practitioners and family practitioners associating themselves with the outlying hospitals.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that medical practice has gotten too specialized, or do you think it's a good trend to specialization?
No, I don't think it's too specialized. I am concerned somewhat about some of the changes that's been made in the practice of medicine, mm-hmm. and I wonder if there is not too much acceleration in the cost of medical mm-hmm. attention to people. Mm-hmm. When I see some of my old patients that were coming to me for a number of years, they all seem to express the feeling that medical attention is almost beyond their means. Mm-hmm. And their concern, and I think that means an awful lot. If the mm-hmm. people are concerned about mm-hmm. it, it must be a problem.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what the solution is going mm-hmm. to be.
So the increased cost of medical care, do you have any ideas of why this has happened, or what can be done to...
I think one thing is the increased cost of production, so to speak,
mm-hmm.
the increased cost of help in doctor's offices
mm-hmm.
and in hospitals,
mm-hmm.
Wherever there's a lot of labor involved, there's always an increase in cost.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's one thing that's driving it up. Of course, the high rate of the insurance premiums
mm-hmm.
is driven it up. And and I think probably for the most part, doctors are living a little higher, so
mm-hmm.
to speak, than they used to.
Where in Houston did you have your office?
Well, for the first 13 years that I was in Houston, I was in the Medical Arts Building, a rather large medical building, where most of the medical people and a lot of the dentists had their offices. But after that time, the hospitals began to move out and doctors started moving out. And beginning in 1941, we had an office near the Old Methodist Hospital, which was about halfway between downtown and the medical center.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a very easy place for people to come to.
Mm-hmm.
People are encouraged to go to doctor's offices if all they have to do is drive up and park the car and walk in the back door
mm-hmm.
or the front door.
Mm-hmm.
People are hesitant about going to larger buildings
mm-hmm.
and having to drive up several ramps into a parking garage
mm-hmm.
or have to park the car and walk three or four blocks to get to
mm-hmm.
Medical offices. So I think that is one thing that inhibits a lot of people from
mm-hmm.
from going to doctors
mm-hmm.
as much as they should.
Mm-hmm.
The difficulty with which they have to get there.
Mm-hmm. So you had a convenient location.
We had a very convenient, centrally
mm-hmm.
located
mm-hmm.
area.
Did your practice ever grow so large that you had to stop seeing new patients?
Probably towards the last I did, mm-hmm. when I felt like that I should be doing pure things.
Mm-hmm.
But I just seemed to work harder in the peak years.
Mm-hmm. What would a typical day be like for you? From the time, say, you got up, when did you get up? About?
Got up early, and we had surgery at usually 7:30 in the
surgery
morning.
Surgery started at 7:30.
Get to the office by 10 or so.
I see. Mm-hmm.
And worked pretty hard until I ran out the good year.
Uh-huh.
Back in the office practice again till uh-huh. maybe 6 o'clock.
Till 6 o'clock.
And maybe some house calls in there.
That's what I was going to ask you. You did do house calls.
We made house calls.
Uh-huh.
Especially before the war.
How many house calls would you do? I'm sure it varied, but...
Well, back before the war, we made house calls on as many people as we saw in office a lot of times.
I see. Mm-hmm.
But the conditions during the war made it more impossible mm-hmm. to make house calls.
Mm-hmm.
And people who were acclimated to have their calls made at home readjusted their requirements, so to speak, and they came to the office.
Mm-hmm.
And after the war, house calls became progressively more infrequent. But I, as long as I practiced medicine, mm-hmm. I made house calls.
Mm-hmm.
Some.
Mm-hmm. Did you find you received, when you finally got home in the evening, did you find you received many calls of, say...
Oh, yes. My patients didn't hesitate to call me.
I see. Mm-hmm.
They called me anytime.
They'd call you in the evenings and weekends?
Oh, yes, and early in the morning.
Early in the morning.
Late at night sometimes.
Uh-huh. Well,
but they were free, they felt free to call me.
Mm-hmm. Were these emergency type calls?
Not always. Always at all.
So, it sounds as if you didn't have any free time at home. Did you have any...
I could utilize the in-between time, you know.
I see. Mm-hmm.
And it's hard on your family to have mm-hmm. a schedule. It was awfully bad before I had any association with the partnership.
Mm-hmm.
But after that, it was easier on the mm-hmm. on your family life,
mm-hmm.
children making plans and so on.
Mm-hmm. And did you take turns with emergency-type calls?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I spell each other, and it worked mm-hmm. out very nicely.
Mm-hmm. Earlier, you said something about your children, but I haven't asked you anything about your wife. When were you married?
We were married in 1927, about a year and a little over after I finished medical school.
I
met my wife here in St. Louis.
Oh, you did?
That's interesting. Teacher out in Maplewood or Kirkwood somewhere.
I see.
And we were married about 15 months after.
I see.
We finished medical school.
Mm-hmm. So you met her in St. Louis.
We went down to where I was in mm-hmm. Vanderbilt at the mm-hmm. time, of course, and after we got to Vanderbilt, we went right over to Houston.
Mm-hmm. Was she from Missouri originally?
Yes, she was from Missouri.
Mm-hmm.
Originally.
This concludes oral history interview number 23 with Dr. Adam N. Boyd, a general practitioner and graduate of the medical school class of 1926. The interview was held on May 13, 1976.